Good evening, everybody. It's a season of Perkei Avot. There really is no season for Perkei Avot. It's always. But the weeks between Pesach and Shavuot are weeks where people are supposed to work on their personalities, their midot, their character, in order to transform themselves from the people that they are when they celebrate the holy days of Pesach to the people they should be in order to maximize their acceptance of Torah on the holy day of Shavuot. So I thought we'd talk about just one particular trait, one particular aspect of a human being for the few minutes we spend together, and you'll see that this is really a lifelong subject. In the first Mishnah, Perkei Avot, the Chachamim tell us, Hevu mitunim badin, be deliberate in judgment. And this directive is aimed primarily at judges and legislators. They're instructed not to make hasty decisions. Don't say, I ruled on this case once before, and I don't have to do it again, and I have to spend time on it. This is something that happens every day. Rather, to look at every case as new and to mull over it once, twice, three, four times until they actually come up with a new judgment on the new case. Hashem taught us a lesson at creation. Favorite parashah, Bereshit, you know. The regulars know. He could have created the world all at once. By choosing to create the world in 6 days, he taught us the virtue of being deliberate and systematic. David HaMelech criticizes one who lacks patience. Ani amati bechovzi, I said in my haste, kol adam kozev. And he was referring to a case where he didn't have patience. On the other hand, that great King of Kings and singer of songs says in Tehillim in the 75th chapter, Ki etah mo'ed, ani mesharim eshpot. When I take my time, I reach the proper conclusions. There's many stories available for someone in my business that would demonstrate the wisdom of our judges and our sages when they exercise deliberation. Harav Eliyahu Chaim of Lodz is one. A Jew found the wallet. He returned it for a reward. Instead of being praised and thanked, the Gentile who lost the wallet accused the honest Jew of stealing some of the money that was in the wallet before he returned it. And so he was brought before a court. Rav Eliyahu Chaim realized that the accused was telling the emet, the truth. And he advised the attorney for the defense how to handle the case. The attorney asked the accuser, the owner of the wallet, if he was willing to swear that the wallet contained 2,000 rubles, not the 1,000 rubles that the Jew claimed. And so the Gentile swore. Said the lawyer, "Of course we believe the baron that his wallet contained 2,000 rubles when he lost it. But we have to admit to ourselves that only an honest man would return the wallet. This would mean that this wallet that only contains 1,000 rubles doesn't belong to this man. So I guess the guy who found it can keep it." The wallet was awarded to the Jew. Two neighbors come to court claiming that their laundry was stolen. Baruch Hashem, you would say, right? Both claim it was the other's items that was stolen. Rabbi Eliyahu Chaim, in his wisdom, thought, and then he asked, "Why don't we bring the laundry that wasn't stolen?" Each one was asked to separate his laundry from the pile. One separated one item from another, and the second one, given the opportunity, took it all. Rabbi Eliyahu Chaim awarded the laundry to the one who only took part. Now, I'm only telling you these stories because you can't, in the way of my great rabbi, Hashem Shagim Rufu'a Shelema, you can't go to the auxiliary meanings or the deeper meanings of something until you give the peshat. And the basic simple meaning of Hevu Metunim Ladin, the Mishnah, means that judges should be deliberate in their judgment. But I always was troubled by the fact that a sefer of Mishnayot, a whole tractate of Mishnayot, addressing so many traits that are supposed to be held universally by so many people, like judging other people favorably, greeting people with a smile, not wasting time, helping yourself as best you can, all those great epithets of the sages should begin with such a group sensitive. How many people here are judges? Zero again. Every time I give this class, nobody's a judge. I'm still looking for one judge. You open up the whole book, Hevu Metunim Badin. Come on, save it for later. Give me something meaty that we can really bite our teeth into. So, it's true that it addresses judges, but we must also realize that it's a directive not exclusive to judges. We all act as judges every single day. And we too must be deliberate. Patience is a positive trait, not merely in the courtroom, but in any situation. There was once a man, Rabbi Pinchasi tells a story about a man who had a watchdog. And he came home and he saw some bloodstains on the floor. He called out to his young son. No answer. He got to his son's bedroom. The watchdog was in the corner, blood dripping from its mouth. Convinced that the dog killed his son, who did not answer, he chopped off the dog's head and stood crying over the spilled blood of his son. The boy, who had fallen asleep in another room, was awakened by his father's cries. The shocked father went outside, only to find a dead wolf. He then realized that if not for the dog that had killed the wolf, his son would have been the victim. Haste makes waste. Deliberate in judgment, mitunim badin, means not being hasty when making decisions. Now, there's a misconception floating around. Maybe I suffer from it, maybe you don't. Let me share how misguided I can be. And how mistaken I might be. One might think that a diligent person is someone who acts quickly, whereas a lazy person is one who sits back and ponders and considers and reviews over and over without any action or before acting. Although we might say that endless procrastination is deplorable, a person who acts quickly without analysis is actually a person who's indolent and lazy. Rabbi Dr. Swirsky says that a person may be too lazy to put their mind to use and make the necessary effort to think things through adequately. And therefore they act quickly. Shoot from the hip, it's easier. Why bother? Sometimes you're right, sometimes you're wrong. We should all realize that this patience is required before we answer someone who might have asked us for advice. And that doesn't only apply to business matters, family matters, but also spiritual matters. How often we see, after reconsidering, or what we call sleeping on it, we reach a different conclusion that we thought at first. In fact, it may even be 180 degrees different. The great Lishon Rabbeinu Yonah, in his Perush on Avot, on this particular Mishnah, says that one who decides without deliberation is called a chote, a posheya, a sinner. And even though he's well-intentioned and meant to answer honestly, his error is looked at as mezid, intentional. Because he should have known that haste leads to error. So from this we see that all people have what is called "at first I thought," and then they have "on second thought." The first thought should always be discarded, or at least reconsidered. By the way, the Pele Yoetz, that great sefer of Musar Eds, that as much as a person deliberates, it's still necessary, and his quote is, "Yitpaleh laHashem yitbarach shiyitem b'libo v'sichlo et ha'itzah tova l'oto adam." That a person should pray to Hashem Almighty that He will put in the person's mind and brain the right idea, the right advice, so that He can assist and advise the person who comes to Him for help. And if you trust in Hashem and you pray to Him, you won't fail. Now I said you're all judges. There's nobody here wearing white wigs, black robes. In fact, you're all pretty cash tonight. But you are all judges. Now one of the situations that individuals come up against every day is judging other people. Happened today? Has to be. Besides invoking the instruction of the Chachamim,
have done it called Ha'adam v'chafsechut,
that you must judge the entire person, or all people, if you want the simple meaning, favorably. We must also arouse in ourselves the strength, because we said you're lazy if you don't, to be patient in our deliberation. When somebody jumps to conclusion, let's say you did something, and then you get accused of something dastardly, which was not what you intended at all, and not what you did at all. And someone else quickly decided that you were ill-intentioned, that you had bad motives. Now, if it was one of us being accused, we'd naturally be upset. But we, similarly, very often are hasty in our judgment of others. You see a person coming out of the house at Shabbat morning. It's a beautiful day. It's one of the few times you got up on time for shul. And you're heading for the shul early. And you see a neighbor come out of the house, dressed in a very business-like fashion, walks to the car, puts in the key, pulls out of the driveway as you hide behind the bush, and pulls away. Wow! Mechalel Shabbat, him! All these years I've been seeing him in shul, he's been parking around the block. Wow! What a scoop! What a bad guy. He acts so high and mighty and so observant and so religious. He wants to be on all kinds of committees and do things and be honored and respected. But look what he does. If everybody knew what I knew, wow! What a bombshell. Did you consider maybe there's an emergency that's life-threatening? Maybe he's pulling out the car because his wife's going to come run out in a minute with a very big belly? Or maybe there's some reason that justifies his behavior? Or maybe he has a walkie-talkie on his waist and he's a Hatzalah member? Never know. Looks can be deceiving. If we were to deliberate, many positive reasons, many excuses, many justifications for the behavior could be reached. But it certainly won't be your first thought. Therefore, you have to be patient before you judge. You know, it's strange. When you're passing judgment on somebody else, a person feels very high and mighty. I'm removed from the situation, I'm not prejudiced, I know what I'm doing, I see what the facts are, and I'm only judging what this person is doing. Do you know you may be judging yourself? Natan HaNavi comes to David HaMelech. He asks him to help with the judgment. Poor man, rich man, sheep. The rich man with many flocks takes the poor man's sheep to make lamb chops. Or some such detail. What should be the judgment? Asked the prophet of the king. And the king rules harshly and quickly. The man is guilty, he's unjust, we have to punish him. In a very harsh way, says the prophet to the king, the man is you. You have everything you took from someone else, leaving out the gory details. The point you're passing judgment, Hashem may be watching to see how you're passing judgment on a situation that fits you exactly. The Maharit gives a very unique application of this principle of patience that we're discussing tonight. Hevu metunim badin, be delivered in judgment, referring to Hashem's attribute, midat hadin, strict judgment. Even when tragedy follows disaster, followed by sorrow, a person should show restraint and not, chas v'shalom, God forbid, rebel against what the victim may perceive as injustice. Rather, a person should deal in faith in the wisdom of Hashem, knowing that He's totally upright and fair and all-knowing. Hevu mitunim, be patient, but din, when judgment strikes. Learn from David HaMelech. He says in the Tehillim, Hashem, Marabu Sarai, how plentiful, how many, how great are my troubles, my woes. Rabbim Qamim Alai, so many rise up against me. His response, I lift a cup of salvation, of victory, and I will cry out praises in the name of Hashem. He was able to transform bitterness into sweet praise of Hashem, and did not fall prey to a hasty assessment of the situation, which may have precluded his acceptance of his pain in the appropriate manner as expected by Hashem. He was matun badin, patient in judging the situation. Even when midat hadin, strict judgment, befell him. Now, since you're all judges tonight, we have to know that it's forbidden for a judge to take a bribe. Did you know that? You did, good. Because a bribe makes it impossible even for the wisest judge to judge favorably. But we, acting as judges, are often subject to bribes when making personal decisions. There's gratification, there's pleasure, there's incidental profits to all kinds of actions that we may decide to do or from which to refrain. We can rationalize anything. A person's thinking is led after and follows a desire for satisfaction. Patience enables a person to be aware that, true, I am biased. But it's no guarantee that a person won't delude themselves. Outside opinion is definitely advisable. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz Hatzal says that every person should be matun badin, patient in their judgment when deciding personal matters. Rabbi Yisrael Salanti says, Kol adam haynu dayan v'shofet al atzmo. Every person is a judge on himself.
כל אדם דן ומתחבט אם לעשות מעשים. A person has to decide how to act and what to do. Or not to do. And in such a way, every person is a judge.
But you know, I didn't pick patience to talk about sages 100 years ago and 200 years ago, or to tell parents not to yell at their kids. Do you know, do you sense, do you feel that we live in a generation of rage? It's a very hot phrase, you know. There's road rage. There's air rage. They're punching ticket agents at airports. There's office rage. There's even desk rage. I found an article. Very, very interesting. Here we are.
Recognizing the root of road rage. Why is it so many of us suffer from road rage? I know you're claiming innocence, but you too are a perpetrator. And I'm judging you for zechut, I know it. What's at the core of road rage? That honking horn, that cutting off. What is it? For those of you out of town, a split second is the time between the light turns green and the horn honks behind you in Brooklyn. Nosing out doesn't mean anything physical with your face. It means jumping into the horizontal parking space before the person backing in gets in. These have created situations of rage where people have shot each other, punched each other, broken windshields and flattened tires. That's called road rage. What's the source? Two simple qualities are at the core of road rage. Selfishness and pride. Selfishness in the American Heritage Dictionary is defined as concerned chiefly or only with oneself without regard for the well-being of others. Egotistic. Pride, an excessively high opinion of oneself. Conceit. If you really thought about these two dictionary definitions, you would find, if you're honest with yourself, that you're really talking about selfishness and pride. Let me give you two road examples. Did you ever really get angry, curse under your breath, or raise a fist into the rearview mirror of someone who honked behind you? You did, right? I could tell from your guilty face. If your answer is yes, then you're ultimately not dealing with them. You're dealing with your own pride. Let's break it down. The horn toots. You become angry. Why? Perhaps you took it too personally. Therefore, you became hurt. Hurt oftentimes turns into anger. Anger because your pride is hurt. Then you become defensive. A tooting horn often indicates a condemnatory action or a behavior. Oftentimes a horn is a stand-in meaning for an insult. But a horn can mean a group of things. Yes, maybe an insult. Or another's impatience. Or maybe it's not meant toward you personally, but it's just a driver informing you about a road situation. It's a warning. You have an excessively high opinion of yourself. And you feel challenged by this horn. I see the light. Doesn't he know I know how to drive? Where is he in such a rush to get to? The horn can represent so many things. But we often interpret it as an insult. Instead of saying, that driver has an impatience problem, we think, this driver is insulting me. This type of thinking, in many ways, lowers our intelligence. And we make wrong conclusions. Now, I said two things. I said, pride and selfishness. This one you all did. I'm going to accuse everyone in the room of this one. You're driving. Let's pick an aggravating road. The Staten Island Expressway. For those of you out of town, it's the worst road in America. Staten Island Expressway. There's always traffic. They've been having construction there since I was 11. I'm now 73 years old. They never finished one lane. I don't know what they're doing. I never saw a man working, but the lanes are always closed and there's cones. Dirt on the road and debris, but nobody's working. Sometimes you see three or four men with hard hats looking at a hole. But nobody moves. You're not sure if they're statues or workers. So you're driving along this aggravating road, running late or really wanting to get some. Maybe you have all day. You don't care. And you see in front of you a little bit to the side a turn signal signaling that the person wants to enter your lane. My lane? That person wants to drive in my lane? The lane that the government took my taxes to build for me? That person wants to go ahead of me into this traffic jam, which is moving at an amazing pace of 2.5 miles an hour? I'm going to let somebody get in front of me? No way. You pick up a little speed and you make sure they can't get in. Look at those guilty faces. Oh, you don't do that. You walk. Anybody who drives does that. Why? Selfishness. Perhaps you're in a rush. My time is more important. I have to be there on time. I can't let you cut into my lane. Indirectly, you're saying, that person is not as important as I am. It's conceit. You both have a right to the road, but I won't tell you that because I don't want to be a victim of teacher rage or student rage. So living in a generation of rage, and some of us do have our moments, while others live in a state of constant heat, shouting, screaming, threatening, gesturing. Gesturing is said with a capital G. Sometimes resorting to physical assaults on ticket agents, toll booth attendants, and spouses. Hi. There's a tiny little book that's very, very big, written in the English tongue, by Rabbi Pliskin. It has a very unusual title called Patience. And on the cover, I have to read the blurb. There's a blurb on the back of every book telling you this is what it's about. This is why you should be reading this and plunk down your money so I can make a profit. Patience is the key to a magnificent life. It's a foundation for reaching goals. With it, one can learn, accomplish, develop one's character, interact harmoniously with other people. The more we increase our patience, the more we benefit. Therefore, my friends, rather than come and complain to you this evening, I've come to help you.
We're going to give you some helpful tips. You are now looking at Rabbi Reader's Digest. One, how to develop patience. By the way, I once heard Rabbi Franz said the greatest training for patience is to drive. Just get behind the wheel and say, this time I'm going to be patient. And he lives in Baltimore. Imagine if he lived here. Learn patience from the impatient. I've been to banks, airports, salad bars, where people stand online. And it's not so far and few between. It's actually very often that I see a person losing their patience in a slow burn. Two lines at an airport counter, this person will switch four times in 3 minutes. Takes the bags from one line, puts them on the other line. If the lady talks to the other person, he thinks, oh, she's almost done. He takes his bags or something. Back and forth between lines. You know, and slowly but surely, the person starts talking, not under their breath, but over their breath, about what's going on here and what kind of airline is this and for what we paid for tickets, how could they treat us this way? And we have to get there, and he doesn't realize you all take off the same time and get there the same time. But when you watch this person acting in a ridiculous fashion and you say, how stupid is this person? You should say, you know, when I'm impatient, if I look in the mirror, I probably look like him. Learn from the impatient. Another common tool for developing patience takes a lot of work. Learning to respect others. Not having to be first, because the other person is just as important as you are. Maybe even, I don't think it's possible, of course, not with any of my students, but, you know, just in the world out there, the other millions of people not in this room tonight. Maybe somebody might just be more important than you. They might have something more important to attend to than you might have right now. So you don't have to jump the line at the pharmacy. Here I'm double parked. Take my... It's only a matter of respect for others. Well, Prozac generation, let me look to the sages of an earlier time. Before Mylanta, Maalox, and Zantac. When people knew how to relax. Before therapy and psychiatric help. When we had Sefer Hasidim, Orchot Tzadikim, Ma'alot Amidot, even Harambam. Let's see how they would deal with this issue before we call it a night. Sefer Hasidim, Siman Pegimel, because you're always there. Take your notes. Where's your pencil tonight? First he comes late and then he doesn't bring a pencil. This class is falling to plan, I'll tell you. We used to be a classy act over here. Chassid echad tziva livno b'ftirato. Says the Sefer Hasidim that a great pious person once advised his son before, he needs it, I don't need it. Before he passed away, I have two. Pencil pen. At all times. You need paper too? Come on, you're ruining the tape. Okay. Can you imagine people jumping in the cars every time I hit the table? Sorry, folks, and if you need insurance, call Allstate. Chassid echad tziva livno b'ftirato. As he was passing on to another lifetime, he commanded his son, Kishem shekibadtani b'chayai. The way you respected me in my life, b'kayem mitzvati. Respect me after I'm gone, and do as I ask you. V'talin kas laila achat. Any time you're angry, sleep on it one night. Delay your reaction. Ve'asob ruchacha shodaber kelav b'shat hakas. And control yourself never to speak when you're angry. Pretty good advice. Sleep on it and keep your mouth shut. I once read, silence is to anger as water is to fire. That's a good one. Send in to read his digest, you get $50. I think it's up to 100 now. Orchot tzadikim, hashtika mevatelet haka. He's writing it down to send it. I split the 50 with you. Now he borrowed a pencil to steal my $50. Hashtika mevatelet hakas. Silence nullifies anger. V'kam kol namuch mevatel hakas. Speak softly when you're angry. Kishikaso megaber alav. Yishtok. When anger starts to overcome you, be silent. O yedaber benachat, or speak softly. V'lo yarim kolo bekaso. And a person should not raise their voice when they're angry. Ki amagbia kolo v'shat kaso. When a person raises their voice when they're angry, as it orerakaz, it wakes up the anger and fuels it. Aval kol namoch u'shtika. There was once a man who was giving shalom bayit, counseling to a couple. And after failing one week after another, he said, I see the normal techniques I teach will not work. You two are always at odds with each other. But I have something very special that I got from a mountain in Tibet, from a special waterfall. It's shalom water. And he took out a bottle. And the crystal clear mountain water filled the bottle. And he said, when you two want to have a conversation, put this bottle on the table. And when you feel like really giving it to the other guy, fill your mouth with water and don't swallow. Orchot Tzadikim also suggests, don't look in the face of the person you're fighting with. It'll only make you more angry. V'da shegamar gemar sechlo shel adam hu shimsho b'kaso. The maturity of the human psyche. I don't think he used those words, but he said, da shegemar sechlo shel adam. The completion of your maturity, bless you, is a person controlling one's anger. Sechel Adam he'erich apo. The mind and wisdom of a person controls their temper. Tzivu chachamim milchem elakas ad she'anig et atzmo she'lo yagish apidu varim machisim. The rabbis commanded that a person should learn to control their anger, even to the point where something that deserves a lost temper will not anger you. Ad she'akor aprut hakas milibo. So says the Orchot Tzadikim. In the Sefer Ma'alot Amidot, he quotes Pirkei Avot. Noach lechos, v'noach liratzot. A person who easily angers and is easily appeased Yatza hefsedo b'scharo. Still loses out in the end. Kashelech os. A person who really is calm doesn't lose one's temper. The kashelech ratzot yet is as stubborn when angered before he can be appeased. Yatza scharo b'hefsedo. In the end, will be a loser. Kashe lichos v'noach l'ratzot. One who is hard to anger, slow to anger, and easy to calm, is called a chassid. And someone who's easily angered and hard to calm down is called a rasha. Folks, there's a middle path. And Rambam tells us, not in observance, but in character, the middle path is best. Midah benonit shelechol de'a ve'de'a mikol de'ot sheyesh la'adam. V'adah achika mishnei kitzavot l'chuk shaveh ve'en ha'kirova l'zov l'zov. To be in the middle. Uficha, therefore, Sivu Chachamim Arishonim. Rambam says, those great sages who preceded him, Shi Adam Sham De'otav Tamid U'Mishayer Otam. A person should constantly weigh and evaluate one's traits. U'Mechaven Otam Le'am Sa'i Kedei Shiyashalem. And put them in the middle. Don't be short-tempered. And don't be, what do you call it? Al-Bered. Impossible to excite. Rav Tzadok HaKohen will leave us with some great words. Anger is like salt. In small amounts, it enhances and makes things delicious. Too much spoils the soup. Good night.